As we saw last time, it's important for us to understand the big picture of how the book of Proverbs is structured. The book of Proverbs is structured along a number of different lines, but the big picture is that up front is the statement about wisdom, and then the lectures on wisdom and folly, which become the manner in which we approach the Proverbs themselves. Once we have gone through the lectures concerning wisdom and folly, which consume the first 9 chapters, then there are different collections of Proverbs themselves. And the Proverbs are mostly stated in antithetic parallelism, 2 lines having opposite ideas, which focus on a singular or common, larger, moral or ethical pronouncement. Most of the individual Proverbs in the book of Proverbs are from Solomon himself. And the largest single collection is from the beginning of chapter 10 through almost the end of chapter 22. So most of the bulk of the book of Proverbs comes from Solomon himself. Now, it's interesting that in the Hebrew language, there are no numbers. It took the Romans to form the Roman numerals that we use to give shape to our number system. How did the Hebrews express numerical values? They expressed numerical values by assigning numerical quantities to letters as they were positioned in the alphabet. In other words, Aleph would have the value of 1, and Bet would have the value of 2, and so on all the way through. And then depending on the number of letters that were used together, they would have the place markers for more digits, tens and hundreds, etc. The name Solomon represents a numerical value of 375. 375. Interesting. These are the Proverbs of Solomon. Now, what we know from reading through the rest of the book is that there are more than 375 Proverbs of Solomon. In fact, later on, a couple hundred years after Solomon lived and died, the men of Hezekiah will gather together another group of Proverbs of Solomon. But these 375 Proverbs of Solomon were probably gathered at the time of his death or at a high point in his life, at a time when his wisdom was celebrated. And so the value, the numerical value of his name is 375. Therefore, 375 of his best Proverbs are collected together. Very interesting. Now, in this collection of 375 Proverbs, the first 180 of the Proverbs in the collection are virtually all antithetic, the dominant form of proverb poetry. The last 195 are somewhat more varied in their expression. In other words, the first 100 or 180 are probably the best of the best of the best of the Proverbs that Solomon ever spoke. And indeed, when you look through it, there is a delightful depth and wisdom and height and breadth of understanding that comes through in these pithy statements. It's not necessary that we read them as chapters. We have, after all, later on put chapters and verses into our Bibles in order to find places and mark passages and to gather people to reading parts of the Bible at the same time. So the collection itself would have been just 375 double line statements, and each of them has value in and of itself. How might they have been used? Maybe as banquet entertainment in the times when kings and rulers from various other courts, other nations came to visit Solomon in Jerusalem, when deals were being signed or when pacts were being made or covenants were being established. They may have been part of the banqueting of Solomon as he had so many marriages. Solomon was married 1,000 times, 700 wives and 300 concubines. Well, that's a big industry in Jerusalem at the time, and they would have to have a lot of entertainment. And maybe they called upon Solomon to provide wisdom that they could then shout back and forth, maybe like vaudeville skits or things like that, where different actors would take the wisdom of their king and then shout them back and forth across the stage. Or they might have even been published in collections and used as training for the youngsters who are growing up to be part of the government in its functionings in so many ways, including Solomon's own children, many children from many different marriages. How do we train these, and what's the values? And so Solomon sets the bar for the value system through these collections of Proverbs. After the collections of Solomon's Proverbs, the 375, there's also a separate collection called the Sayings of the Wise. Now, there are two collections of Sayings of the Wise, and these may well have been Sayings of Solomon, but what's interesting about these Sayings of the Wise, the first is the 30 Sayings of the Wise, and then there's a fragment, more Sayings of the Wise, five more Sayings of the Wise appended to it. But the first group of those, the Sayings of the Wise, is paralleled in an Egyptian collection very similar to it called the Wisdom of Amenemopet. That collection is dated to around 1000 BC, which is about the same time as Solomon, and it has nearly parallel structure and content. It also has 30 brief sayings of the wise, in which 10 of them are virtually identical to these sayings. Now, scholars wonder about this. They know that there has to be some relationship between the collection in Egypt and the collection in Israel, between the sayings of the wise in the book of Proverbs and this wisdom in Egypt, which came first. I like to think that the possibility exists. Notice that in Solomon's own life, one of his first, if not his very first marriage, was to the daughter of the Pharaoh of Egypt. And I wonder whether the wisdom of Solomon in its fame and others learning about it became a source of a wedding gift. So that when Solomon was married to the daughter of the Pharaoh of Egypt, that one of the things Solomon did was collect 30 of his wisest sayings, create a little document, and give that to the bride's father, his father-in-law, and make this as a tribute to the king who would then rule wisely in Egypt. It may well be. In any case, there's a lot of parallel between these two. Here's an actual picture of one of the manuscripts of the Wisdom of Amenemopet. And here are some of those proverbs, both from the wisdom in Egypt and the Proverbs of Solomon. Notice the similarity. Incline thine ears to my sayings, and apply thine heart to their comprehension, for it is a profitable thing to put them in thy heart. In the Proverbs of Solomon, we have bow down thine ear, hear the words of the wise, and apply thine heart unto my knowledge, for it is a pleasant thing if thou keep them within thee. This is all stated in King James language. You can find other translations of it as well. But another one from the Wisdom of Amenemopet: remove not the landmark on the boundary of the fields, and trespass not on the boundary of the widow. And in the book of Proverbs, from these sayings of the wise: remove not the old landmark, and enter not into the field of the fatherless. So you see the parallels between those statements in the Egyptian collection and those in the Proverbs. Very similar. And here's again a whole list of Proverbs that are paralleled in the Wisdom of Amenemopet that are almost identical in character. Well, after the Wisdom of Amenemopet and the Sayings of the Wise come a second collection of Proverbs of Solomon. It's not as long as the first collection, but it's interesting that these were collected by the men of Hezekiah. Now, Hezekiah was king of Israel, Judah, actually, about 200 years after Solomon. Solomon's reign, of course, was the greatest expression of the power and status of the Israelite society under the wisdom and rule of God. 200 years later, Hezekiah was trying to recapture that glory at a time when the Assyrian government was pressing down, and recently God had miraculously delivered the people. And I can imagine that as Hezekiah wanted to portray to the people that his kingdom was a resurgence of the glory of the kingdom of Solomon, one of the ways to do that would be to publish documents from the past. And so he had his men scurry through all of the archives of the government and gather more of the Proverbs of Solomon that were recorded there, so that during this year of celebration and year of restoration, the wisdom of Solomon would again give guidance to the people as it had during the days of the glory of the kingdom. Though it's similar to the first collection of Solomon Proverbs, there's more diversity of subject matter in these, and literary form as well. Maybe the first collection was meant to honor Solomon at his death, and that's why there were 375 Proverbs connected to the number of his name, and that these were some among the leftovers, so that some of the most prominent or most likely sought after were already in the earlier collection. Most of these are still antithetic parallelism and single couplets, but there are more multiple line Proverbs among them. Then comes a very interesting collection, the sayings of Agar and King Lemuel, and we have no idea who these people are. Some speculate they were from the Ishmaelite tribe of Manasseh, and a reference to that is in Genesis 25, verse 14, that these came from the wisdom of the East and entered Israelite culture through the traders of Edom. I can imagine that Solomon in his wisdom was always looking for others who said wise things and gave wise guidance, but it's hard for us to know where exactly these came from. The form is very different than for the other Proverbs in the collection, particularly in the use of numbers for identifying extremes. There are three things and four over and over again for adding emphasis. The Agar reflections are on life in general, typical situations that you and I might run into here, there, another place. Those that are from King Lemuel, as we have it, are more focused on what happens in the life of kings and rulers. What makes for a good ruler, and what should we know in order to rule wisely? Again, where these came from, we're not certain. Probably Solomon found these statements of wisdom very interesting in his own reading, and so added them to the court wisdom literature that was used to train others in good government and the young to find their places in society. Remember the overall plan of Proverbs, though. While much of the book of Proverbs exists in those very brief, usually two lines of antithetic parallelism nuggets about living wisely, they only make sense after reading that initial lectures on wisdom and folly in chapters 1 through 9 as a single unit. There, at the outset, we're told that we are like a young man going into a strange situation in which there will be women who will seek to have a relationship with him. And the women are identified in terms of two, wisdom and folly. If we choose the female wisdom, something happens. If we choose the female folly, something different happens. If we choose the female folly, then the rest of the book doesn't mean anything to us because we've gone down a path where we have already chosen against the wisdom of the collection. If, however, at the end of those lectures we choose wisely, we choose wisdom as our life companion, the rest of the books, the rest of the fillings in the book, the rest of the Proverbs themselves, are essentially the atmosphere in and the furnishings of the house of wisdom. In other words, the Proverbs themselves are the lifestyle of those who may have committed to a one-time relationship with God as manifested in the personification of wisdom itself in their lives. The connections between Proverbs and the wisdom literature of the other nations may well show the success of God's activity through Israel and the fame of Solomon that spread. God said to Abraham at the beginning of their relationship that through Abraham and his descendants, all the nations of the earth would be blessed. And these Proverbs show that kind of thing. The wisdom of Solomon becomes recognized through the ancient Near East as symbolic of the life with Israel's God that all nations ought to desire. And that, in the end, is the great mission of God, seeking to win back all of the nations of the earth. And the wisdom shown through God's people entices them, helping them to find attraction to wisdom and wisdom's God rather than folly and destruction. Good things to think about.